Sal Capaccio joins us on the Western Hotline, part of our Football Friday coverage here on WGR. Get all we need to know about this game, injury designations, all that good stuff. Sal, good morning. How much of the game did you watch from the cricket ground, and what'd you think?
I up until about end of the third quarter, and I said, I just can't do it anymore. It's been a long week. I tried, and it was, you know, kind of in hand for San Fran. I'm like, you know what? I'd be surprised if I woke up and they lost this, and they did. And I woke up, I looked at the score, I'm like, okay, because they played well, and the Rams, you know, kind of, you know, made some mistakes. And, you know, good on San Francisco to go out there and everybody talk about the Rams and this super team they have, and the Rams are doing. Even I said yesterday, it feels like the Rams kind of, whether they did it right or not, their players have bought into how they've approached this, where the 49ers were more like, well, I don't know what time it is. One of our coaches didn't have his 50th birthday. You know what I mean? Like, it just felt like they were more discombobulated, but give them credit. Yeah. They played well. And I did not see the fourth quarter, but I saw the score when I got it.
As they say, the winner writes the story, right? So if you're the Niners, you whatever you did worked, and whatever the Rams did not work. And, you know, for the Rams, Myles Garrett says his knee is an issue, and it was the worst version of himself out there, so he's got work to do to get back. They played without Aaron Donald, and Matthew Stafford did not look particularly sharp, so not a good start for the Rams. Sal, it's funny, like, so much was made of the sleep study stuff, and I also saw an account on Twitter pointing out that in the last couple of years, you can basically find teams that did not play their starting quarterback, and they get off to slower starts, if nothing else, in the first half. He's tracking team totals and has been fading teams that do not play a starting quarterback at all in the preseason. Fade them early. They're going to get off to a slow start. It might take them 30 minutes to get ramped up. And sure enough, the Rams got off to, you know, they got a touchdown on their second drive, I believe, but slow start. And, you know, maybe that's something else as well. These teams are always trying to find out what works, what doesn't, walk all these lines. And, you know, for whatever reason, the Rams did not look like they were ready.
Did Stafford not play at all in the preseason?
He has not played in multiple seasons. Yeah, he usually does not play in the preseason. So,
okay, let me check real quick.
Did C.J.
Stroud play in the preseason? I'm looking right now. Here we go. Here are their passing stats. He did. He was 4 for 6 for 27 yards.
Okay, so he and Allen both played a little bit in the
very
preseason.
Very limited,
Limited. Yep. But some action, right? Just some.
Yep,
so,
that's right.
Anyway, before we get to the matchup, Sal, part of what we'll talk about in the matchup is injuries and what could happen. So let's get to the Barnes Firm Injury Report, brought to you by the Barnes Firm. If you've been injured in a crash, call the Barnes Firm, 1-800-8-MILLION. Friday going into the opener, what does the injury report look like?
So three players are on the Bills injury report. One of them returned to practice yesterday after missing Wednesday, Jordan Hancock. One of them has not practiced in 2 days, really since August 8th. That is running back Ty Johnson. And one of them practiced on Wednesday, but limited, and then not on Thursday. So you have all different kinds of levels here. One that's been kind of the same, not practicing. One that's been trending up, Jordan Hancock, and one trending down, and that is TJ Sanders. So it appears that, to me, like from the outside looking in, we'll find out more today. We'll get injury designations today. It appears that Jordan Hancock is on track to be available to play, which is really good news because he's your backup nickel. And then you can maybe feel more confident in having an extra defensive back if something were to happen to the outside guys. D. Alford could slide over. Now you have your available extra nickel. You don't have to elevate to Corey Couch. And the reason why that would be important is you're going to only get two elevations. And you're going to probably need one for Frank Gore Jr., considering Ty Johnson is most likely not going to play, considering he has not practiced at all since August 8th. Now, they could roll with just two running backs, but they only have, if you only go into the game with two, you know, you're leaving some things open to chance how you want to play it. So I would think maybe Frank Gore Jr. could be an elevation. TJ Sanders is an interesting one for me. So I think here, just me thinking out loud now, I wouldn't be stunned if TJ Sanders can't play in this game, if he's an IR candidate. And here's why, Jer. I mean, they already have six available interior defensive linemen on the roster. If he's hurt, you still have five. You could put him on IR. You still have five. And then that opens a spot to sign a guy like a Greg Dortch, maybe, who you don't have to elevate and use one of those elevations. And because you're only going to get two elevations this week and every other week, I'm just wondering about the way they want to formulate the roster. That could be an option here.
You know, Sal, as you were going through all of that, I wondered about the Jordan Hancock element playing a role in whether or not D. Alford is going to be returning punts, because he's listed as the punt returner. The fact that Hancock is available, would you feel like that also extends to you don't have to feel nervous about Alford returning punts if you decide to do that?
Yes, I think that's right. I think the question is, though, is it going to be D. Alford? Yesterday, I put out a poll on Twitter at Sal Sports, and I wrote, who do you think is going to be the first player back to return the first punt for the Bills? And overwhelmingly, Bills fans voted Greg Dortch, 66.5%. The next guy was Khalil Shakir, not even D. Alford. And the next guy was Ray Davis. Actually, D. Alford was last in the polling from the fans, which I think is kind of interesting because he is the number one guy. Now, I asked Joe Brady, you know, what is going to happen there if he, you know, you want to share it, whatever, in whatever capacity. And he said, they have a lot of guys who can do it. They'll go through the week and they'll decide. A lot of guys will do it in practice, and then they'll decide what the 48 looks like, which exactly what you're saying, Jeremy. A lot of that, the injuries play into that, right? Where do we need this guy? What do we want to put on this guy's plate? I still think Greg Dortch has a really good shot to be returning the punt. Now, again, does that mean he's elevated? Does that mean he's signed to the 53 because of TJ Sanders or someone else goes on IR? I'm not really sure. If you don't, now, if they do elevate Greg Dortch, that'll be by tomorrow at 4 p.m., right? If Greg Dortch is elevated or signed, he's the punt returner, right? There's no way he's on the roster and not the punt returner. We'd all agree with that, right? There's no way that they're going to do that. Okay, let's say they don't. What if Greg Dortch is not elevated or signed by 4 p.m. tomorrow? Then it comes down to D. Alford, Ray Davis, Khalil Shakir, and Keon Coleman, and I think D. Alford will be the guy.
All right. Sal Capaccio joining us. The running back conversation, as you were saying, two running backs, Nate, you're shaking your head like not a good idea to go in there with two running backs. The protection plan, it's funny, Sal, like we know James Cook's going to get the ball, but we're thinking about Ty Johnson, we're thinking about Ray Davis, whether it's Frank Gore, whoever it is. We're thinking, I think, at least I am, about who will be available to help the offensive line with protections. Could Jackson Hawes find himself in the backfield for extended blocking pass protection packages? Do you feel like that is something that will be a point of emphasis for Brady this week? It's dressing players, it's formations, it's going to be built around how they're going to keep Allen from getting hit so much here in week one.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, so you go back to last year, they started off the game with two tight ends. Now I have to go back and look, where did they line up? And maybe it was like flexed out. You know, I mean, it doesn't have to be that they were both with their hand on the ground. They started with two tight ends. They didn't have Dalton Kincaid. I think they're going to use all their tight ends. The question is, like, do some of those tight ends kind of stay in? They chip, they block. Do they line up in the backfield? What are you going to do with pass protection? Let's start here. First of all, I think Ty Johnson, if he doesn't play, that's a really big loss for the team. You know, he's a very good pass blocker. They trust him. It's a very loud environment. You have a guy who's a veteran, knows the system, knows the calls, nonverbal communication, and then he can leak out and he can catch passes out of the backfield. If you're, you know, Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson, you're going to get after the quarterback, but you also have to know that that guy standing there might actually go out for a pass, and linebackers have to account for him. I think Ty Johnson losing him is big. That said, it's not like the Bills just lost him this week or last week, right? I mean, if Ty Johnson doesn't play, trust me, they've known that for a month, right? They've known that for weeks. They built in a game plan to be able to do that. So we'll start there. That could be Ray Davis. You could still do that. You know, maybe he's not the same level as all those things as Ty Johnson, but he's a guy that you trust right there. And then Frank Gore Jr. would be the third guy. Let's talk about tight ends now. You do have flexibility at tight end. You have four available on your roster. You could make all four available if you want to go two running backs. And then, as you say, Jeremy, maybe Jackson Hawes lines up a little bit more as a pass protector. Maybe they put him more as an H-back, something like that. You can use those guys in some creative ways if you want. Let's remember this, all right? The more you bring people into the formation, if you're going to run two tight ends and they're both going to be on the line, the more blitzing you invite. The way to get away from that is to spread the field. If you want to not have them blitz as much, you really need to spread the field a little bit more a lot of times. Like, condensed formations invite more blitzing. Spread formations allow you to identify blitzers and not allow them to blitz as much. So that's why I think maybe even if you get the tight ends on the field, you're not doing it in the capacity of having like a Jackson Hawes just stand back behind Josh Allen.
You know, talking about protecting Josh, Sal, how much is this game a revenge game of sorts, a redemption game of sorts for the Bills' two tackles. Spencer Brown talked about it a lot yesterday, so how he hopes to come out of this one with two shoulders. And, you know, he gave the Texans' defense its flowers about how good it is. It would seem like, you know, we could joke about bulletin board material, but that Brown and Dawkins both probably want another crack at this team.
I agree with that. And you have to be careful not to make it about that, right? And I think the Bills have tried to do a good job of that. And look, we all know what's happened the last 2 years. We all know Josh was 9 for 30 2 years ago, and we all know that he was sacked 8 times. And the tackles were left on an island. They didn't play well. Spencer Brown, I think, was already a little bit beat up, and then he comes out at the end of that game. He's beat up, and he's beat up after the game. Deion Dawkins gets injured in the game. I think Joe Brady took a lot of heat for how the protections went. So everybody learned a lot. Really interesting yesterday listening to, I think it was Brady, maybe it was Jim Leonard, but who was talking about, I think it was Joe Brady who was talking about, because he was saying how there are several coaches on their staff who have some experience playing this team and came from, you know, other organizations where they played them a couple of times last year or the year before. Like, they're a little more familiar with even Pat Meyer, their offensive line coach, like just kind of knowing, you know, what to expect maybe. And I think, and they said that they've been collectively trying to gather as much information as far as a plan of attack and how to go about it. So, yes, I think all of that matters. And I do think that those guys want to play better. But I think collectively it's about, let's have a better plan than what we've had. And what can we learn from what this team has done the last couple of years, especially against the Buffalo Bills?
Sal, too, one of the things I almost wonder, and felt this way last year, with their insistence on just running 5-man protections against this team. And I wonder how much of that, and I know Joe Brady, you mentioned it, got a lot of heat for their protection plan, but frankly, a lot of that protection plan goes on your offensive line coach. And how much of it maybe was a mindset of Aaron Cromer that the Bills do believe they're one of, if not the best offensive line in football. There's probably a good amount of numbers that would back that up over the last couple of years. How much of maybe their game plan last year was it confidence, maybe even leaning to an overconfidence in their ability to win more one-on-ones than not? And how much of that experience and maybe new mindset in that offensive line room might change not just the way and how they scheme up to, I don't know, stop the pass rush of the Houston Texans, but maybe more of the mindset that they'll enter in this game with?
Yeah, I think they're always confident in their guys, right? And I don't think they have any less confidence in Deion Dawkins or Spencer Brown today than they went into that game with necessarily. But you still have to account for what's happening on the other side, what's happening in the crowd and the environment and the noise, the checks at the line of scrimmage and all those kinds of things. Pat Meyer had worked under Aaron Cromer. We've talked with a lot of offensive linemen about kind of, you know, the communication from Pat Meyer versus the communication from Aaron Cromer. And it's funny, like, I think it was Alec Anderson talking maybe last week about how they might say, hey, did you learn that from Cromer? He learned that from you, something like that, right? So I think there's a lot of crossover there. And there's a lot of the same thought process that goes into it. Let's remember that Aaron Cromer kind of ran the running game for the Bills, right? When it came down to the running game and the blocking scheme, that was a lot of Aaron Cromer. And, you know, he would be in constant communication with Joe Brady as far as what running plays to call and how they want to attack a team. You know, that's not him anymore. He's not there anymore. And I don't believe Pat Meyer's doing that. I mean, we'll have to ask the Bills how this goes this year. And I think there was a question to Joe Brady about that earlier in the year. And I don't think that's the case. It's, you know, Joe's running the offense and he's calling the plays. So I do think there's going to be a bit of a change there, Matt, Nate. I think a bit of a mindset change, but I don't think they have any less confidence in those guys. They just have to, during the game, understand a little bit more maybe than they did last year. And Joe Brady has to say, look, I got to give my guys help. We have confidence in them, but it's not going well in this game. How do we change that?
Sal Capaccio joining us on the Western Hotline ahead of Bills Texans to prepare here. The look ahead schedule here, Sal, the Bills are, if I may, catching some breaks along the way. We know Detroit, who they'll play in a couple days. Well, less than a week. They're missing pieces in their secondary, and we got the news yesterday that A.J. Brown appears to be out for at least 4 weeks, which means he'll miss the Bills-Patriots game, and New England all of a sudden looks like they're in maybe some trouble. They've got tough games before that. So just worth noting, you know, it's about your own health, but also the health of your opponents, and it is, knock on wood, it is breaking the Bills' way.
This is a really – we've talked about this. I mean, even if you want to go to what happened last night, I mean, they get the Rams in week 5, right? On a Monday night. And, you know, the Rams don't look like necessarily last night this super team. But, you know, week one is always can be fool's gold to a lot of people, no matter about that. But I'll say this about week one. As much as that is true, week one can be fool's gold. You can look back at week one and go, oh, my God, wow, that team looked really good week one. They had months to prepare, but they weren't that good, or vice versa. But the games still matter. Think of it this way. If the Ravens had held on to beat the Bills last year and the Bills don't have the comeback, the Ravens win the division. I mean, that's how important that game was, right?
Yeah.
They come down to the end last year. They missed a kick. They don't need to make that kick if they beat the Bills, I think, in week one. I think if that's how it would have played out, they would have had enough wins. Week one matters. I mean, the schedule matters. Every game matters. And to your point, Jeremy, yes, I think that, you know, the Bills here, this is a tough matchup. They come right back home 4 days later. They get another tough matchup with a team that's a bit wounded right now. We'll see what happens in their secondary and their hostile environment at home, opening Highmark Stadium. And then the Bills get 10 days to get ready for another team coming from the West Coast to play an early 1 o'clock Eastern time zone game. Then they stay at home for a third straight week and get maybe an A.J. Brownless New England Patriots. You have to take advantage of it. And I think this game, this week one game, can really change the trajectory of a lot of things. Meaning this, if the Bills go to Houston and lose, all of these vibes, all of the boxes that I keep saying that I think Joe Brady has checked, as good as the offense has looked, all that kind of stuff, it doesn't matter. People are going to be calling on Monday morning and saying, I don't know if they hired the right coach.
Yep.
It's the same old, same old. They still can't beat this team. It doesn't matter who's in charge. And it doesn't matter how they lose the game. If they lose the game, that's what's going to happen. If they go to Houston and win, I just think that can be an incredible springboard to start this very tough five-game stretch. And then you're going into the home opener Thursday night going, okay, like, you got a really good opportunity to start this season 2-0 against two good teams.
Sal Capaccio. Sal, before we let you go, today's also the 25-year anniversary of 9-11. We were talking about a little bit earlier. That's, you know, a day on the calendar. People remember where they were. Can kind of remember the NFL and how it came back and how Major League Baseball responded in New York. And just wondered if you wanted to share anything about your day that day. Were you in Florida at the time? What was your story?
I was, and I had at that time decided I was going back to school to become a teacher. I'd left radio full time, and I started my radio career down there, and that's when I was in transition. So I was actually going to classes at the University of South Florida, the Sarasota campus at the time, which, as you know, that's where President Bush was at the time that that happened. Not right at the campus, but he was at the Sarasota airport. I would go up to Tampa, or I'd go up to Sarasota to their campus to take classes. And that morning I had a class, but it was a little later in the morning, and I was living with a friend of mine and her boyfriend, and I was renting a room. And she said to me, she woke me up and she said, hey, I just want you to know. And at the time we didn't know. She said, the way she described it, she said something like two planes collided or something. She didn't know exactly what happened. And, you know, something in New York City at the World Trade Center. I'm like, what are you talking about? And I got up and I looked. And then obviously I saw, okay, all classes are canceled today. All those kinds of things. And, you know, I was dialed in the rest of the day. I was also bartending at night at a sports bar. And the sports bar that I was bartending at was actually owned by two former Port Authority police in New York City. And they were retired. They were in their 50s, I believe, at the time. They were retired. And this was a Giants backers bar. You know what I mean? Because these guys were big Giants fans. And these two gentlemen who owned the bar, the sports bar that I was bartending at night, they actually were at the World Trade Center in the first bombing that took place. You remember that in like 93, maybe?
Oh, yeah.
And they actually had been a part of that. So as you can imagine, they were very, very close to the situation, and that the whole bar, people were gathering there and watching. And it was obviously a really tough, tough day for everybody. And I remember being there that day and the days following with them, and, you know, them knowing a lot of the people that were a part of all this and you know, all of those stories.
Yeah. 25 years, long time, you know, long time.
Yeah. You know, I said that last night. You know, I said that to Yana. I said, I can't believe it's been a quarter century. It's been 25 years. You know, it goes by quickly. And, you know, we also remember September 11th. Today is my mother-in-law's birthday, you know, you know, it's a day you want to celebrate that, but you also know that it's a day to remember what happened in New York City, right? And And that's how a lot of times we talk about it. You know, it's her birthday, and this is what happened on September 11th, 25 years ago. And you know, you have kids that are well beyond born when that happened. My son was not born for, you know, another, what, 10, 12 years after, you know, 9/11. And all they remember is, and all they know is the stories that people are telling. And I have friends who are teachers, and I'm sure you are, and you have friends that were teachers at the time, and they would tell stories about how they, you know, brought the TVs into the classroom and the kids and things like that. And I was getting ready to be a teacher, and I remember being in a school and environment at that time and how all of that went down. And I was coaching high school football at the time too, by the way, and all the games were canceled that week, right? Yeah. We had all the games canceled, and there's a lot of confusion, guys, as you know, and there was a lot of confusion on no one kind of knew how to handle everything, what to do, or what the future held. That, I mean, long-term and short-term, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of those moments. You're talking about, like, people, you know, our children not yet born. We got two guys on the show, Joe Kelly and Owen. That's how long ago it was, Sal. Like, that's before they were born.
And that's
like,
exactly
having to tell them, you know, all that it was like. And
Jeremy, when you, sorry, if I can say this, I remember growing up in the 80s, right? And like, I'm 53 now. And, you know, the early 80s, I'm 10, 11, 12 years old. And the 9/11 now is further removed from when I was that age to the JFK assassination.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I always think about, like, boy, when I was a kid, like, oh, JFK assassination, you hear about it, was so long ago. We're further beyond that than when I was a kid and people would tell me about that.
Yeah. And the other thing about that, Sal, I think about trying to impart on guys like Owen and Joe is, you know, there's days you remember, of course, like national days and things like that. And then there's days that you remember that you would, how many would you really say in your lifetime you felt that the world changed that day? Mm. Not just everybody remembers the day that happened, you know, like the Challenger explosion, or for me, like there's that, there's the OJ chase. And this one is a real honest to goodness, like, oh no, lots of things changed after that.
No doubt. I mean, obviously travel in the United States really, really changed, right? And security and a lot of the ways that we do things now to this day change. And it's ever changing. And I read the thing recently about, did you read how like TSA is now going to allow people to go to the the gates, right? And and I think that was how, wasn't that how it was before 9/11?
Oh yeah, you could go through security.
That's right.
You did not have to show a ticket. You just go to the gate, wait with someone, wait for someone.
Yep.
Yeah.
But 9/11 changed all that. You couldn't do that anymore.
Right.
For 25 years.
Thank you, Sal. We'll check in from Houston.
All right, you got it, guys. Thanks.
All right, Sal's heading to Houston, and he'll be on part of the pregame show. Yeah, like you said, the team's insane. It was very normal if you were going to the airport and someone's leaving town, your wife, your brother, anybody. You just go and hang out and wait with them and then say bye at the entrance to the plane.
Yeah, that's
crazy
to me.
Or if someone was landing, you wouldn't surprise them in the waiting room area. You could just be there
at the gate.
Mm. Like, hey, welcome home.
I experienced this for the first time. I just went to Washington a couple weeks ago, and they didn't have me scan a boarding pass. It was just my passport. I could have gone right through without a boarding pass. And I saw people saying goodbye, and I was like, that's different. I just assumed you could do that all the time. I didn't realize that was a new thing, like going back to it.
Yeah.
I travel a lot. I'll tell you, that is exactly what airports need right now, is more people that aren't traveling. That's what this needs. Yeah.
803-0550, Jeremy and Joe. Nate's in for Joe. Joe's out this week. He's back on Monday. Actually, back on Sunday, part of our pregame coverage. When we get back, a new element to our Football Friday coverage. We're going to chat with Vic Carucci, NFL insider. He'll join us coming up in a moment here on WGR.
Yeah, we have a show to do, Zach.
I was like listening to the music. I was like waiting for the clip, and I was like, "Oh, the music's been playing for a while." Go.
Yeah, no, we're just back.
We're just back. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show here on WGR. It is a Football Friday. Bills getting ready for their opening day matchup Sunday, 1 o'clock at Houston.
Zach, it's not just a Football Friday.
I know.
It's a Pizza Friday.
It is a Pizza Friday.
Pizza Friday on WGR 550. It's brought to you by Joey's Pizza. Make your Friday even better with 25% off any small one-topping pizza. Just order online at joeyspizzabuffalo.com and click the code WGR25 at checkout. Hey, we got a pizza code.
I ate breakfast this morning. I didn't realize we were doing this. So I saw the pizza coming, and I was like, damn, I screwed that up.
Look, hang on.
Kind of missed on that
one. I will say pizza at 9:30 in the morning is a little violent.
It's football season. And I think everything now
is a standard cheese pep pizza.
Yeah.
A little violent, you know? Like, not everyone's going to partake in that. However, and this is the duality of man, I definitely ate a slice.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, I would have eaten a slice if I didn't eat breakfast this morning. Again, I was like, oh, I screwed that up.
I even ate breakfast and decided to do it. Like,
that's good on you.
Look, man, I'm not the greatest at decision making. We all know this.
Here's the thing, though, with football season. It pushes everything back a couple hours. On a Sunday, if you're having an adult beverage at 10 in the morning, no one judges you. We all assume we know what you're doing, tailgating or just getting ready for the games. We all know. We get it. If you're on the West Coast, the games start at the end of the morning anyways. So, I mean, that's mimosa o'clock right there. So everything gets pushed back.
Would you pizza mimosa?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's perfect brunch right there. So if you're having pizza, you know, for breakfast and it's just cheese and pep, perfect. I also must say, not the biggest breakfast pizza fan.
Same.
And it's not because I don't like eggs or anything like that. It's just if I'm going to have a piece of pizza, I either want the traditional cheese and pep, or I'm big on having mushrooms or banana peppers, Kalamata olives, stuff like that.
I've learned as I've gone on, I'm more of a traditionalist. Mm-hmm. When it comes to my pizza and my wings, I just want the simple, the good, the effective.
Yeah.
I want it to be simple, but I want it to be great at being simple. That's the thing. I want it just to be great.
It's like Marco Pierre White, the former chef that made Gordon Ramsay cry, who's his mentor. His whole thing was like, he gave away his Michelin stars, and his whole thing is just, we've gotten to the point where food is boring. Like,
right.
it's all about the just how it looks and how intense it was. Where he's like, just make good food.
Yeah.
He talks about like having street food that was in multiple different countries that's way better than any food he has in these Michelin star restaurants. It's kind of the same thing of like, I just want the traditional done really well. It's the same with a lot of restaurants. If they've got a 6-page menu, probably don't do anything great.
Yeah.
If they've got a menu that's 2 sides, most of it's probably great.
If I could flip my menu over, I know I'm getting some good stuff.
Yep, if that's it.
If I could flip my menu over and it's got stuff on the back of it and that's it, I'm getting great food. I can't name names, like, you know, go willy-nilly on this sort of thing, but like, honestly, I've had Joey's before. It's around mm-hmm. the corner from where I live, like, you know, and mm-hmm. they're sponsors, so I can say something about
yes.
this. It's good pizza.
Yeah.
And so much so that I had it at 9:30 in the morning.
There we go.
So there you go. Pizza Friday. We have a code, WGR25.
803-0550, the number to call if you want to jump on as Bills, again, getting ready to take on the Texans. It is opening day on Sunday for the rest of the NFL. We've already gotten 2 games done and over with, Wednesday and Thursday. We talked a little bit about the game last night. We talked a ton yesterday about Patriots and Seahawks. But going into Sunday, I've mentioned a lot this whole offseason, how good I feel about this Bills team going into it. I know a lot of stuff off the field has not been the greatest, whether it be uniforms, the stadium launch, the grass, the firing of McDermott and how that was handled, if you want to go all the way back there, the first 2-3 rounds of the draft, everything. It felt like at every corner the Bills took, it felt like it was in some ways a wrong direction.
Yeah, it was not enjoyable this offseason at all.
But I do feel good about where the Bills as a team sit. And talking with Sal yesterday as well, you know, for our jobs, somewhat frustrating, but I think as a fan, very encouraging. The preseason was boring. The most exciting part about the preseason was a weather delay in Cleveland. That was the most exciting part of like, oh, are we going to even play this game? Like that was it. For the most part, the Bills were dominant. They looked in control. There weren't any, to my knowledge, kind of coaching goofs. You know, I even saw a perfect 2-minute drill from Kyle Allen. We got to see DJ Moore pop off in the first game. The last one, you get to see Skylar Bell look way better than every backup that he's playing against. So there's that encouraging sign if that's your fifth receiver. Really, the biggest concern was special team stuff. Who's going to be the punt returner week one? Probably not going to be Ray Davis after the muff punt. It might be Greg Dortch, who they have to elevate from the practice squad. It could be just Khalil Shakir, who's not even on the injury report after missing a couple of weeks with a knock. I'm in a really good place with them, and I've said it a lot. I love this matchup against Houston because it sets the table for what could be a great season for the Bills. It is not end of the world if they lose. Likewise, it's not plan the parade if they win. But if they do beat this Houston team, if they look good on offense, if DJ Moore is really able to kind of unlock something that's been gone for the last couple of years, if this defense is able to rattle CJ Stroud early and often, you do get to that point because they've been so good over the last couple of years, even with some pretty obvious warts.
You said that it's not playing the parade, but if they win 31-6, yes, it is.
I know. That's the thing. Yes, it is. There is also a world in here where I'm the Absolutely. Same way I was after 22, where it's like, I mean, guys, I know it's September, what would that be, 15th or whatever it is, 14th, that Monday? We're going to the bowl. I know there's a world in which I'm going to have that reaction. There's a world in which many of us would have that
reaction. Context is always key. I always want to say that, and I always want to save any proper reactions for that. But there is a world where, yeah, they just put it to the Houston Texans week one, and we go, okay, so we're good.
Season done. Thanks for showing up, everybody.
We're just fine. We're just fine, actually, everyone. Thank you for your concerns. We're still going to be a problem.
I take Brad's point that he made the first preseason game when we were doing the game cast, because I did not want to see the starters play, and Brad was fine to see the starters play, and a big reason why was the offseason that was.
And I was having fun watching you sweat.
Of course. But just seeing the guys that you know are going to be out there when they play Houston play really well and be really good, and it did bring back that feeling of like why this era has been so much fun. For all the pain and the tragic endings and stuff like that, I don't want to say I wouldn't change it for the world, because I would. I want them to win a Super Bowl. But this has been the best part of my sports fandom of my life, is the Sabres making the playoffs last year and these last couple of years with the Bills. It has been unbelievable that I can get up every day as a Bills fan and know I could be celebrating a championship in a couple of months. Like that maybe should happen. Where for years my sports fandom was, that's just not for us. And I would imagine even people from the 90s, it was maybe a similar thing happening, because if you were a fan in the 70s and the 80s, you're dealing with losing for a decade straight against the Dolphins. And then, of course, we do get to the Bickering Bills right before the Ascension. But it almost seems like part of like the Bills fan existence is you have to go through a period in your childhood where they're awful. And then you get there to when, in your teens or 20s, they take off. I know, of course, it's not perfect, because there are, of course, people that are kids growing up with this.
There's kids growing up with the successes, and then they have to deal with the dip. But
it does seem to be how it goes, though, for the Bills. They have some down years, and then they're really good for a while.
We are – the Sabres have to fulfill on the promise of this. But our generations, Zach, they can really say – you know what's pretty cool about dealing with a historic playoff drought? Seeing the other side.
Yeah, getting to where we're at
and
now.
And finally seeing the other side. The Sabres do have to make do on their potential and their promise of continuing that.
Right.
But you mentioned them first. That's not an accident. You mentioned that they broke their playoff drought and what last year was. Yeah, that's not a mistake. It's also because of the fact that the Bills have also given you this fun era, but a lot of painful stabbings at the end of each of these seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a little bit of a resentment that carries into it. It's the fine, delicate balance of appreciate what we do have in front of us, while also still demanding the greatness that they show they can deliver on. They have the promise. They have the potential. They have for years. And they still carry it. So it's a fine balancing act. Knowing also, man, the last 17 years before that were also just straight up awful.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, you have to build up like small wins here or there, right? It's the promise. It's the potential. It's also... I want to see this team kind of go back to what they were in the early 2020s when they first got good. I'm excited by what I'm hearing, what I'm not hearing from the Bills and the Bills coaching staff. Jim Leonard, listening to him yesterday, talking about like what it means to be an aggressive defense. Like, they don't want to allow an offense to get into a rhythm. They want to throw their punches too. And it felt for the last couple of years like the Bills dared you to try to be perfect. And in concept, and even in the wording of that, that sounds great. The problem is when you didn't have those erasers, those game changers, many teams could be very good against the Bills' defense. They could. I mean, we even got there last year where even though the Bills' pass defense was ranked near the top of the league, it was a lot of it. The feeling was, well, why throw on the Bills when you could just run on them? And then we got into the playoffs, and, well, you're going to give up 30 points. Like, Allen and the offense have to be perfect. I am so excited to see what this defense looks like, being more aggressive, maybe giving up more big plays, but perhaps making more big plays as well. And putting these guys who are younger, more athletic than some of the past Bills we've had, you know, the last couple of years, what they can do when they're asked to be great. You might get burned over the top, but I also might see Cole Bishop ascend into one of the better safeties in football. Christian Benford might ascend to one of the better cornerbacks in football. Terrell Bernard, who his whole MO before his injury last year was, I make the big plays Tremaine Edmonds couldn't. Get back to that first year where, what did he have, 6 sacks and like 3 picks? You're like, excuse me? Like, you're a middle linebacker. What are you doing? This is awesome. Deion Walker.
It's awesome.
Deion Walker. Like, what is he going to become in the middle of that defense with them also having added Greg Gaines in and maybe him being more the true nose tackle, so that allows Deion Walker and Ed Oliver to pin their ears back and go, Hoyt and Oliver.
Might I even say an ascension of Landon Jackson being in a comfortable position now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the more strong athletic type, not having to be an edge rusher, but now he can make plays within the interior. There's a lot that you can look at about this team on the field and just put the ball down.
Taking Brady's message, just put the ball down.
Put the ball, like, let's go. It's much like in hockey. Drop the puck. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go for both of these teams. And it's a wonderful feeling to be excited not just for the Bills, but also the Sabres. We can include them in this, too, on a Football Friday. Like, the last time you actually got to feel good about both of these teams was actually 1999.
That is incredible.
At the same time, you were able to feel good about both of the teams was 1999.
Feels good. It feels good to be in this spot. It really, really does. 803-0550, the number to call. We're talking the game on Sunday. There's some injuries. We'll get to those with Sal Capaccio coming up at 11 o'clock. Bills, for the most part, pretty clean bill of health, though. There was a downgrade yesterday. Houston, though, may be out a very talented rookie after he was also downgraded on their injury report yesterday. Again, we'll get to that stuff with Sal at 11, but your calls welcomed throughout the morning here. We'll be on until 1 o'clock, and then Brad and Tim got 1-3, showing the Bulldog 3-7. We're rocking and rolling here on a Football Friday, and this is WGR.
First real game, right? You had the preseason where we got to work on some things, really evaluate the talent, scheme, pretty straightforward, a little bit watered down from what we want to do. And now it's time to go. I love competitive football, right? You get to the regular season and it's time to go throw everything out there and ride it till the wheels fall off.
Jim Leonard there from yesterday. He was speaking with the media. It is the first real game for the Bills. We finally We'll get the season underway. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show for the final time starting on Monday. Got a little bit of a schedule switch. We'll be on 6 to 8 p.m. During the middays, going from 10 to 2, it's going to be Brad Ryder, Tim Graham, Owen Parker. I think Owen and Tim are going to be kind of switching and
tagging in and out.
So that'll be cool. And then Show Up the Bulldog going to be starting an hour earlier, going from 2 to 6 now. So then we'll take over 6 to 8. So that should be fun. We're starting that on Monday.
Hey, you know what's cool?
Bills Victory Monday?
Well, that too. We have a show to call our own, actually.
Yeah, it's been weird the last like 2 years.
We've been doing the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show and happily doing so. But, like, it's just, it happens to have been with Derek and Zach.
Yeah.
Like, or Zach and Derek. But also with Sal Capaccio.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and as I hit the mic, I'm doing great here. But it's actually pretty fun to have a show that we can call our own. It's evenings, but hey, you know what? It's kind of the vibe anyway.
It's kind of the vibe anyways. That's absolutely true. I get my mornings back. That's
kind of how I am. It's kind of who I am.
So Bills Texans, we talked a lot about it the last couple of months here leading up to this. I think especially too, as I've mentioned, the preseason and stuff like that, it not really offering many storylines. So it just always came down to like focusing on the Texans. hearing from a lot of Texans guests too, it's such an important game for Houston as well. I think, of course, because it's our team, we all focus so much on it. But for the Texans, they were an anomaly last year. They start 0-3. They're dreadful to begin the year. And then they pick it up, and they really never look back. They are fantastic after that 0-3 start. But they did start slow. It was not good. Their offense was really bad to begin the year. They are dealing with injuries. I've mentioned that for the Bills, their first four opponents all are dealing with some injury concerns that may hold them back early on in the season where the Bills are not. And that, you could argue, has maybe been the Bills' biggest hit over the last couple of years is injuries. But for Houston, so curious how that locker room will be. So curious how that locker room is going to be. If they go out there on Sunday and it's just a continuation of the playoffs. Because we saw it once already this week. We saw it once. Drake May was not great in the playoffs. He was not great to end last year with cover six really becoming a big thing when playing the Patriots. Teams really started to figure him out. And it continued on Wednesday to start this year. If Stroud goes out there on Sunday, and we took a call earlier this week, what happens if he throws the game away? Multiple picks, bad sacks, and all of a sudden what should be a close game becomes a rout for the Bills, not necessarily because the Bills are just moving the ball at will on offense, but because, well, Stroud did what he did in the playoffs, which is you threw it away, and now right. The Bills are able to comfortably win. I wonder how that gets immediately. We talked with Jonathan Alexander, who covers the Texans from the Houston Chronicle. He mentioned that, he's their quarterback, and it would take a catastrophe, I think is the word he used, for this to go south for Stroud. I also wonder how that defense feels, though, if they feel another win is taken away from them, and this is to start the season of, great, we handle this team. We handled Josh Allen. We have no problem against him. And we lost because of you. It may not even be the main reason. But if he plays poorly, it could get loud fast because it already is for May. And May went to the Super Bowl last year. May finished second in MVP voting. C.J. Stroud did not do any of that. C.J. Stroud is still trying to hit the heights of his rookie year. Now 3 years ago.
Right. And for Stroud, it's more or less how he ends the year. He's not good against the Raiders of all teams. Then the Chargers and the Colts.
The number one pick Raiders.
Yeah, the number one pick having Las Vegas Raiders. And then the postseason, it's just dreadful turnovers. If it's a continuation, like we saw with May, for Stroud, it's a lot harder because there's that moment where he tells Caleb Williams, learn from this. Ooh. And the direction that his career went from there, when he seemingly sounds like this
grizzled vet, 35-year-old. Grizzled vet,
know-all mentor type, when he's only really entering his, was that second or third season?
It was his second year.
It was only his second year. To tell a rookie quarterback, learn from this, like you've mastered it all already. And the direction his career has went since then is still something that Stroud has not been able to counteract.
Right, like that's even before the playoffs that started to become a thing for him. Because last year wasn't great. He starts it off poorly. And so like that was something that was coming out, that clip that he had. Which in reality is probably just another young guy being like, dude, it happens. Keep your head up. I was there last year. That kind of vibe. Absolutely, it probably was that. But the wording of it came off as, you're right, a grizzled vet telling this young dude, keep your head up, because we see it, Brady, Manning, Rodgers, Stafford. We all remember it from Allen's rookie year or his second year, when he was first coming up, of keep your head up, you're going to be just fine, kid. Doesn't matter if they really mean it. You hear it all the time. I want the Bills to get after him early. I mentioned it with Sal. If they can force the issue on offense, go up early, whatever, or just they drop back to pass and they just send the hounds. Deion Walker gets in and you force him to maybe start to see things that aren't there, get uncomfortable fast.
And with Stroud in particular, I don't know how threatened I need to really feel about him overall, even within his rookie year. He's yet to throw for 25 touchdown passes in a season. Has not done it yet.
Oh, that's right. He hasn't. It was 23 his rookie year. That's right. Yeah.
He has yet to throw for 30 touchdown passes, let alone 25. He can get you, but there's plenty of ways where he just doesn't.
Right, and the weapons they have are limited. I already mentioned the run game. It's really, it's Nico Collins. We'll find out about Kayshon Booty. We will find out about that because, I mean, I'm sitting there on Wednesday going, you're telling me the Patriots couldn't find a spot for this guy?
Yeah, the Patriots mishandled that one majorly. I do think Booty might be – if it wasn't so late, I would think Booty would be a bigger problem, but he's still going to present a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. I just – I think there's a route here where the Bills can get on him early. Because it should be noted, like, they didn't play Stroud last year. It was Davis Mills. But Mills is like the perfect backup quarterback of, I'm not going to throw the game away. I'm gonna stay on script. I'm not going to make any crazy plays. But I'm not going to kill the team. He's a very, very good backup quarterback. The Texans, I think, were 5-2 with him last year. They were very, very good with him last year. Stroud is different. Stroud is also that starting quarterback mentality of, like, it's my team, we're going to go for it. I love this matchup for the Bills to open up the season. I've mentioned that multiple times. I think they're in a really good spot health-wise. I think they're in a good spot mentally as well for how they want to attack the season, being more aggressive, not being as passive, you can argue, as they were, both offensively and defensively the last couple of years. Offensively, it was all about ball control and time of possession and running the ball, you know, not turning it over. Where when they first got onto the scene, it was all about kill quickly, strike fast, you know, go down the field, deep crossing routes, you know, be the demon in the night for every team. Make them fear you. Make them catch up with you. Make them just stay pace. Where the last 2 years, wildly successful, by the way, go to AFC title game, you're overtime away from going to a second straight. It's mainly because of the emergence of James Cook that even that strategy works at all. That he's able to be a home run hitter and also just a really good running back. Now they've gotten maybe back to that early 2020 mindset plus the run game. And then defensively, you could argue the last 2 years is actually what's held them back. Now they're going to be more aggressive. They may give up the bigger plays, but as we all know, in the postseason, they were giving them up anyways. And then they were making big plays. So I like where they're at mentally, and I think this is a great matchup to get the year going. 803-0550, the number to call. You want to jump on, give your thoughts, as it is Bills Football Friday, and they play on Sunday in Houston at 1 o'clock to get their season underway. Lee is up first this segment. Lee, how are we doing this morning?
Good, how are you?
Doing well.
Good, yeah, I got two things. First, I want to start off like with the game last night. I understand the hype is all around the Los Angeles Rams, but can you really sit there and say that this team is old? You know, they're bringing a guy out of retirement that basically has been out of the league 5 years. Who knows what's going to happen with him? He might tear an ACL. You don't know. He could work out all day until somebody rolls on his leg. Bottom line is, my thing is, Matthew Stafford's up there in age. You know, and people are making excuses while it was the travel. Bottom line is, a football game has to be played. Now, as far as the Bills go, as far as the offensive play calling with Joe Brady, can you see a lot of different things that McDermott didn't do? You know, something like when Brian Daboll was here, you know, you saw wide receiver reverses. You saw Josh Allen catch a pass from John Brown, you know. Can you see stuff like that? Maybe more screens, not the wide receiver screen. More screens with the running backs, maybe.
I think so. And Lee, I've been kind of going at this theory, and thanks for the call, for, well, ultimately, I think since Joe Brady's been the offense coordinator, I wonder if he was calling the offense for the personnel he had. We've talked about it for longer than 2 years, but the Bills have had a receiver problem. Even going back to Stephon Diggs, they didn't have a wide receiver too. They put too much trust in Gabe Davis to take that step forward. He never did. And then when they trade Diggs away, they draft Coleman, and Coleman does not become a Stephon Diggs replacement, not even close. And they're trying to make it work with Mac Hollins and grabbing Amari Cooper, you know, 6 months before he retires. Brandon Cooks last year, make Josh Palmer a major fixture and their number one receiver last year. It just hasn't worked. And so I've wondered if it's not McDermott asking Brady to do this or demanding that he does certain things, but more just Brady having to work around what he has. I think many of us have offered the idea that the everyone eats while everyone's doing it with a smile on their face, it was more along the lines of, well, no one's good enough to garner the targets that Stephon Diggs did or Ja'Marr Chase does or Justin Jefferson does, Puka Nacua. So everybody will. Everyone is going to get into the fun. That did lead to Mac Hollins getting a pretty nice contract by the Patriots. Someone did win in this. But I think that's mainly why Brady called that offense is the personnel they had. And you saw it this offseason. They went and trade for DJ Moore. They go draft Skylar Bell.
There's more of an investment into the position.
Mm-hmm.
And naturally, you're going to get a response from a guy who likes to adjust accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
I'll still never forget that Dallas game.
Yep.
Base dime defense. I don't care what we wanted to do. We're just going to do this thing.
Yeah, this is really working. We're just going to keep doing it.
We're just going to do this thing.
And I think it is notable. It's funny, but I think it's notable. No one has said everybody eats on the Bills. Nobody. If anything, it's the exact opposite. Allen, after the first preseason game, hey, is it going to be important to get DJ Moore going? Yeah, we think it's going to be important to get DJ Moore going early in every game. That points to a team that thinks he's going to have over 120 targets, 130 targets.
It points to a man who really has adjusted to no matter what his role was or what his team has been. With that LSU team, yeah, you're going to air that ball out, aren't you? You're also only the passing game coordinator, so, you know, work with what you got.
Mm-hmm.
But in Carolina, he doesn't do as well with that, though. He's seemingly not running the ball enough when he has Christian McCaffrey until the end. And then Matt Rhule wants to play multiple quarterbacks within a game, and Brady is the scapegoat. But Brady learned from his time in Carolina. Work with what you got and adjust accordingly. And with Buffalo, he has done that.
Mm-hmm.
Are the screens frustrating? Yes.
Specifically with Khalil Shakir and behind the line of scrimmage, that kind of stuff.
That's also my only complaint about him.
The screen game?
The screen game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that just has more to do with the Bills than anything else. I always wondered what a screen game looked like in practice because the defense couldn't stop him worth a damn.
Right, so it might be one of those things like, guys, we are lost too. It works every day in practice.
Yeah, no.
We are just as stunned as everybody else.
What do you mean the screen game is not working for us offensively? It works in every practice.
Look, guys, you don't understand. We're betting 900 with this in practice. This is stunning development. No, I the screen game, I know, bothers everybody. It bothers me. I think Shakir deserves to be used more down the field, more as a playmaker than with just the screen game. Screens are never going to go away. They're easy button throws for quarterbacks. They're also a really good way to just get the ball out of your quarterback's hands early. Good chance Sunday. They're throwing the ball a lot quickly. Get it out of Allen's hands so that Will Anderson doesn't feast, so that Danielle Hunter doesn't feast. Look what the 49ers did last night. Myles Garrett doesn't even play the full game. Aaron Donald's not even out there. They were getting the ball out quick. Do not let your quarterback get hit. Do not let your offense get out of rhythm. Get to McCaffrey. What's James Cook going to be this year? Pete Carmichael wanting to catch the ball more. Ty Johnson is trending and not playing. That could be used as well. And to Lee's other point, too, with Brian Daboll, the trick plays. I don't know if they're ever going to come back to in bulk like they were under Daboll. I also don't know if I need them. I'd like more guys screen.
I'd rather not see them because Baltimore 2 years ago.
Yeah. No, all right, I remember that one. That kind of ended the game. But I'd like to see more guys schemed open. But for the most part, if DJ Moore is just getting open early for them and Khalil Shakir is able to be a slot guy, Dalton Kincaid is that wide receiver tight end hybrid, I mean, they've got the playmakers that they should probably be just fine. 803-0550, the number to call. Want to give your thoughts on Sunday's upcoming game. We are here to take them. We're on until 1 o'clock. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer. This is WGR.
Sal Capaccio with us now on the Wesher Hotline. Sal, how are you? How are all these drafts you're in going?
I'm in four leagues, so two of my normal leagues that I've been in for a long time. I guess they've all been a little bit longer now. One I actually started myself in the late 90s. I'm still in it, but I'm not the commissioner anymore. It's down in Florida with my buddies. And then another that I had the draft last night and been in that one since the late 90s as well. And then we have this media league and Jeremy's Guillotine League. That's the four that I'm in. Plus, I do like the Survivor Leagues and all of that.
And they're going okay.
And, of course, February fix.
February fix. I forget about that because it's fixed, Mike. It's fixed.
There's nothing to do.
We do that in February, and we fix and we set it and forget it, basically. And I kind of forget about it until you send the updates every week. And, yeah, we had the draft last night. And I've been – this year I was kind of in a different spot drafting in all of these drafts, basically, which was kind of cool.
Every night is different when it gets late like this. I wonder about my buddies in Vegas, what they'll do with A.J. Brown after last night. Like, do you just not take him at all? I mean, that's probably 4 weeks, the kind of injury that maybe becomes a problem all year. I don't think, I mean, there'd come a point where I would take A.J. Brown, but it's probably, I mean,
50% later than it,
sixth
than you
round,
would have,
maybe. Yeah. I'm trying to think of a guy I would that I don't like that I would take. Godwin, I think I'd take Godwin over him right now. Not that you should have a name ready, but you know that's what happens. And Bowers with his injury that we talked about yesterday, somewhat the same thing. Well, last night, can we start with this game before we get into Bill's news here? What did you think? How culpable is May for the Patriots' loss in your opinion?
Extremely. You know, I came on here yesterday and I thought and I feel good about the fact. I said I think the Seahawks win a close, low-scoring game. I thought that that was the way that the Patriots would want to play it and kind of not put themselves in harm's way. And they did, for the most part, do that. But here's the problem. When you do that, you have such less margin for error. And at the end of the game in the fourth quarter, the quarterback gave up that margin for error. He threw three interceptions on, quite frankly, three balls he should have never thrown. He didn't look good last night. His arm looked very, very weird.
I agree. A lot of Twitter chatter last night was, you know, there's not a lot going on there. There's a lot of floating, a lot of fluttering, and I wonder, you know, if he's over what was bothering at the end of last year, even. I think that's the question you can get to. That's definitely extreme, I know, but he didn't look good all night, I thought.
No, I agree with you, and the decision making, you know, was bad too. On top of that, which is, you know, he is a reason, a big reason they lost the game last night. You could say the sole reason. I hate doing that because it's a football game and a lot of things happen. I mean, heck, the punter for Seattle was a reason too. I mean, he put them in really tough spots. Here's a big takeaway I have from last night, though. Honestly, like this Patriots team is playing football, and it goes back to last year. And I thought it would change this year, and it hasn't. And I think it's going to really hurt them and cost them. Feels like they want to play like the 2000s Belichick's or even before that, like close to the vest, you know, just win close games, do what you're supposed to do. And, you know, at the end of the day, we'll be the team on top because we can win those margins, right? That's not how football's played as much these days. And quite frankly, you have a talented young quarterback on a rookie deal. You went out and you got him some talent and you got A.J. Brown. You got Romeo Doubs. Don't do that. You don't have to do that. You need to let them play football. And it feels to me like Mike Vrabel is like, nah, we're going to run the ball and we're going to play this close conservative game. And guys, last year, this stuck with me the whole year. When Sean McDermott, when the Bills lost to them last year, when they came here, that was the game they played, right? They came, played that kind of game. Keon fumbles. The Bills have another fumble later and still takes the Patriots to the very last couple plays to win the game on a field goal.
Very similar to last night. Yep.
That's right. And after the game, Sean McDermott said, we played the game they wanted us to play. They wanted to muck it up.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, that's how they want to play.
Yeah, you know.
And I think it's going to really hurt them.
We had a caller earlier say, like, how accountable would you hold the coaching staff for the play at the end for May? And I said, Sal, and I don't know, maybe you disagree. I think the first two picks are absolutely horrendous decisions. And the first one especially is a horribly thrown ball. There's three defenders closing on it. The second one, he throws a decent ball, but he should have never thrown it because I think he got tricked by the coverage, which happens. The last one, I mean, that's single coverage on Mac Hollins. If you throw a good ball there, you know, it's your guy can make a play on it or it's out of bounds. kind of play, right? It should have been more toward the back pylon and more, you know, it was right at the sideline. So that part he got, but he just threw it too short and left himself susceptible to turnover. I don't blame him for taking that shot. It's single coverage. I mean, you can laugh at it being Mac Hollins, but, you know, whatever. He was dependable through the...
Yeah, their best game of any receiver.
He made a bunch of, a couple of key conversions, including a late fourth down on that drive. So I don't mind him throwing that ball, but you gotta throw it where only your guy really has a shot at it, and he failed to do that.
The one thing you can't do there is turn the ball over. Right. They were set up to go to overtime. Now, I like the fact they tried to win the game. I think that's what you do right there. You have a chance to win the game. You're in the red zone. There's 35 seconds left. You're on the road. You're playing the Super Bowl champs. Go win the game. Like, great. You'd want your team to do that. You'd want the Bills to do that in that situation, not just sit on the ball and then kick the field goal. But you have the field goal in your back pocket. Even if you take a sack, you have the field goal in your back pocket because you're not going to be out of field goal range. The one thing you can't do is what Drake May did there and throw that ball into harm's way. And he did it.
He's on his back foot. You just got to throw it into the seats.
100%.
The McDermott point is interesting about that first game because he got smart in the rematch. He got down 21-0, so the Patriots couldn't do the same thing.
Yeah.
Then they couldn't muck it up. There's 21-0.
Right.
They had to open it up. The Bills had to open it up.
Well, I will tell you a thought I've had about Josh McDaniels for a long time. I said this today when I was on Extra Point Show with the guys, and I believe this, and I don't necessarily have any analytics to back this up necessarily or numbers. It's just something I felt about him going back many years. I think Josh McDaniels is really, really good at creating a game plan. He is going to find a way to attack your weaknesses. I think he is not very good at all at adjusting throughout a game. And that has been something that has hurt him ever since he hasn't had Tom Brady. That you can go out in a game and you can be up 7-0, 10-0, whatever, because you have a good game plan. You can figure it out. And throughout the week, you're working at it and grinding and understanding all these little things that you can do. Well, guess what? You don't have Tom Brady on your team to hide the warts throughout a game when things start to not go your way, and I think last night was an example of that.
Man, and again, our guy, Ryan Paganetti, former Eagles coach, today on Twitter, he's like, I'm just going to tell you, with Josh McDaniels, he had a whole layout about what the Patriots do with or without Mac Hollins on the field.
Yep.
And he's like,
yep.
I mean, I know he was with the Raiders last year. He's like, I know we were terrible, but we beat them, and this is how. This is one thing we did because he put it on McDaniels that they just are so married to certain tendencies within certain formations that they become predictable like that. I'm also reading that going, they went 14-3 and won two playoff games, but they did lose to the Raiders. And last night, I think I would say to wrap on that, I think I'd have to call it a bad loss, even though it's by 3 at the Seahawks in the opener. I think because of 10-0 and the turnovers.
It reminds me, Sal, of the opener for the Bills in 23 when Aaron Rodgers gets hurt. And, you know, a couple plays into the game, you're facing Zach Wilson, backup quarterback. Might as well be Drew Locke or worse. I don't know. But what did Allen do that day? He threw 3 interceptions. He's trying to hurdle over guys even though he's 6 yards short of the first down. He was all wound up. And it was a really weird game. It's the main reason that – like, while everybody is dunking on Drake May, and we'll see if he's got a real problem throwing the ball downfield because of an arm problem or something, then that's a whole different conversation. But like, I don't want to clobber May for having a terrible game in the opener against a tough opponent because I watched Josh Allen play like a donkey against the Jets in 23 when Aaron Rodgers got knocked out on the fifth play or fourth play of the game, whatever the hell it was.
Yeah, the whole May discussion, you opened with it, and I'll just say, like, it is a discussion right now. And if you're at WEEI in Boston doing your show today, like, this is a talking point. And I see a lot of talk about, look at what CJ Stroud was and how that regression happened. And I don't know. I still think the kid's pretty good, but there's starting to be some evidence here that maybe, you know, he's just not quite up to what everybody thought he'd be. And I don't know. It's going to be really interesting going forward to watch this. And the A.J. Brown injury obviously impacts possibly October 4th here in Buffalo. You know, if he goes on IR, he's going to miss that game. So we'll see if they actually do that with him.
Well, we keep going on this game here. But the one criticism as we were talking about the game plan and, you know, muck it up and just try to win this sort of low scoring rock fight type game. The one thing that I thought was really noticeable early is Seattle's down, Emin Wurry and another safety, And so, you know, some of their superpower is missing in this game. And I thought they waited too long to get to A.J. Brown. Like, it just, you know, maybe establish that right away. This is your one of the biggest ticket acquisitions in the league in the offseason, honestly.
No doubt.
And just make them worry about him, you know? And they really didn't. It just, they wanted to sort of ease into the game, and I don't know. I thought they were a little too timid at the start. I get Seattle, you know, knock them around in the Super Bowl, and they want to be careful. But I just thought it was the wrong move, considering you've got, you know, a top five wide receiver on your team now, and you just ignored him for a couple of possessions to start the game. And I thought you could have set the tone of the game. Like,
right,
all night long, you're going to have to figure, you got to change something because of us here, because we're finding a way to get this guy off, design plays to get him open, easy pitch and catch, and there was none of that.
Well, this goes back to what I said. I think that this whole Vrabel philosophy is, let's just play a tight, establish the run, play a close game, we'll be okay, we'll win the margins. Well, guess what? When you do that, at the end of the game, you make a couple mistakes, you lose.
Right.
Sal Capaccio with us. Would you put DJ Moore in the same category for this game on Sunday? Like, get established DJ Moore? Is that something you want to see?
I think I even mentioned that. Like, if we're doing this show, like Sal said, in Boston, like, we'll be on post game. If they ignore DJ Moore for the first couple of possessions and are going three and out and punting, I don't think that's the right thing to do. Again, it's a tough opponent, tough defense. They gave you a real hard time. But a part of the reason you went and got DJ Moore is to make this not as tough a matchup for you. So lean into it. Use it. If you got a guy that you think can beat Stingley or Lassiter or whatever, get you know.
That's a big if.
Right, but scheme him open even. Whatever you got to do.
I wouldn't blame the Bills for thinking that they don't have – DJ Moore's not that player, but they traded for him.
He damn well better be, I think. I mean,
I mean, in the preseason, first game, Josh, DJ Moore, 3 catches, 61 yards over 2 series. End of the game, we go to the media room. One of the very first questions to Josh, how important was it to get that connection to go into DJ Moore early on in this preseason game? And Josh goes, listen, I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's going to be important to get him going early in every game to force the defense to adjust.
That's what I'm saying.
Sal, the injury report today, very similar to yesterday, but TJ Sanders went from limited to DNP. Jordan Hancock the other way. Ty Johnson still not practicing. That's the whole thing. How do you read it?
Yep. So I read it as you're not going to have Ty Johnson or TJ Sanders available on Sunday. Obviously, that can still happen, but with both of them missing, especially Ty, for 2 days, and if TJ Sanders was limited yesterday and DNP today, that means he's trending in the wrong direction, right? So let's just start there. I think with TJ Sanders as a DNP today, after being limited yesterday, this could make him an IR candidate in my mind. The Bills have 6 interior defensive linemen on their roster. They could shelve TJ Sanders. Now, Zane Duran is also on IR. But you could put TJ Sanders on IR. You still have 5 healthy bodies to play in the game. And then you can sign somebody from the practice squad to join the 53, like a Greg Dortch, and not have to use that elevation. Then you still have your elevation for Frank Gore, because if Ty Johnson's not available, you're probably going to need that. Now, you probably aren't in a situation now where you're worried about D. Alford being the only nickel corner because Jordan Hancock came back, but obviously, Tecori Couch could be in play there if that were the case. But it does allow you some roster flexibility. Now, I don't know what's going to happen with TJ Sanders here over the next couple of days. But I would think that that could be something that they could do here, guys. Put him on IR, sign somebody to 53, like a Greg Dortch would be the first guy to come to mind. Now he becomes your main punt returner, obviously. Then you don't have to use those elevations on him. That's how I see that. And, yeah, I think Ty Johnson is a big loss, as we talked about, if that's the case. Now, here's the one thing, though. It's not like this is a surprise for the Bills, right? They have not been with Ty Johnson for over a month now.
Right.
If back in the second week of August when this happened and rolling into the first preseason game, I'm quite sure they knew they might not have Ty Johnson available for week one. So you know what they've been doing? Building a game plan knowing they don't have Ty Johnson for week one.
Right. It's not like he got hurt in practice, right?
I mean, correct.
They've known for a while. I wonder what, though, you think Frank Gore Jr. is the call-up. I mean, he makes the most sense. But what about the role that Johnson plays? Like, is that too much to put on Ray Davis's plate? Does Frank Gore Jr. have that? Like, I'm thinking of like more pass protection than route running here, because you know I think James Cook could run, you know, work off of Ty Johnson's, you know, route tree.
And it's Houston,
fine enough. But I get right. Like I'm worried about the guy standing next to Josh Allen in the backfield on passing plays.
I don't think anybody is going to be able to do it to the level of, you know, Ty Johnson. But I will say this, when there was an uproar from fans about why the Bills did not keep Ian Wheeler on the practice squad and they rolled with Frank Gore, Brandon Bean answered that question. And he said, Frank Gore is a more complete back. Third down, pass protection. He understands the offense. So I think at least that gives you a little bit of some insight into them, you know, thinking that Frank Gore is able to, you know, handle those duties if called upon in that situation. But I think it's Ray Davis more than anything. If they get into a situation where, you know, they need, you know, they're thinking about who are we going to have on the field next to Josh Allen in those spots, I think Ray Davis is the next guy in, is the first guy in line before even, you know, James Cook as far as pass protecting and to be able to do that. But you also have flexibility with your tight ends who suddenly become, you know, kind of options. You could also just go max protect up front and empty in the backfield. And you could do it different ways. We'll see how they want to play that. They have four tight ends on the active roster if they want to do that. I'm looking back at the Jacksonville Jaguars game, which Frank Gore played in place of Ty Johnson, and he only played four snaps. He did not play any offensive snaps from what I can see the following week at Denver. So if that gives you some insight into how they would do it. In that particular game, it was James Cook. This is the Jacksonville game. James Cook, 38. Ray Davis, 20. Frank Gore, 4.
Gore does not have an NFL rush to his credit, but he has one catch in one of those snaps against Jacksonville in the playoffs. Tonight, we've talked about this yesterday, Rams, Niners, and the two franchises' different approaches to traveling to Australia. The Rams, like, okay, here, this is like their approach to it boiled down. We slept on the plane, we'll land, and we'll sleep when we get there. I don't sleep on planes. I mean, you've been in these NFL planes where maybe it's just like your own bedroom or something for every guy. Like, is that something you can teach? I mean, is this something that's ever come across your desk, Sal? Like, players who struggle with that? I mean, not every Bill is going to be a great flyer. And, I mean, I don't know how just, like, matter of fact it is. The Rams, apparently, Sam Monson was funny on this. The Rams have been sending people back and forth to Australia
couple of years,
to test it.
Right.
I mean, and Sam was like, how much carbon fumes is that? But okay, good for you. They also apparently went, one of their players, a tight end, went on the trip and then they cut him and he came back. So that's tough. But I don't know. Like, do you have any thought on...
That's a tough place to lose your job.
I mean, we already talked about, we already talked about like the two teams having different approaches to it, but... Can the Rams just expect their players to sleep on the plane? Is that something that they would like help to teach them to do if that's possible?
I mean, you can help them. You can give them something, I guess. I don't know, right? Yep. There's over-the-counter stuff you can give that, you know, would be you know, legal, I guess, in that situation. Not without knowing all the ins and outs of that. I mean, you guys know, I think I said this yesterday to you. I just think that there's so much that these teams do, but yet... You can't just put it on the collective like that. Everybody's different. Everybody's body is different. I'm driving in, by the way, I love the fact, 2 to 6 for you guys. Awesome. It's really, I love that, you know, for you guys to be able to kind of have that time slot and you're done at 6 o'clock. And what am I listening to Bulldog talk about? Look, you're getting up, you just have to change your routine every morning, right? And you can do that. And some people are morning people and some people are afternoon people and some people are evening people. Some people can fly and sleep on planes. Some people can't do that. I just think that there's way too much to me in all of sports, but especially a football team that's made up of 53 players and 17 on the practice squad and all these coaches and staff members that, you know, trying to do it the right way for everybody when everybody is a little bit different. Everybody's going to react different.
Who do you like tonight?
I mean, I like the Rams. I just think the Niners seem like they are very discombobulated with this whole thing. I don't know if the Rams' approach is like perfect or right. But at least it seems like they're on board with it, whereas it feels like the 49ers are kind of scrambling, like, I don't know what we did here. We lost the day. Raheem Morris didn't have his birthday. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's weird.
Yes.
Well, that could also be the pregame speech.
Yeah, right.
Listen, everybody, I know you're distracted. I know you're tired. You see this man over here? He's put in decades in this league, and he didn't get his birthday.
We skipped his birthday.
We flew across the ocean, and we missed his birthday. Let's win it for Raheem.
Well, listen, I mean, you know what it reminds me of? You guys have watched the movie Bull Durham, right? You've seen the movie Bull Durham.
Believe it or not, yes.
Okay, and Kevin Costner basically says, like, if you think you're pitching well because of this, that's why you're pitching well, right? Like,
put the garter belt on, right?
Right, yeah, exactly right. Great scene. So this is what it reminds me of. Like, this, why, like, the Rams, I think the Rams are a really good team. They're a better team. I would pick them anyway, probably, if this was, you know, being played in another neutral site in America. But my point is, like, it feels like they've bought into whatever their organization has done here, where maybe the 49ers are like, I don't know, did we do the right thing? What time is it? I really can't tell.
One place that's really not a neutral site for the Rams when they play San Francisco is their home stadium. So
right, they can get overrun.
The
crowd might be more evenly split in Australia, or even maybe possibly pro Rams,
than it is in L.A.
Than it is in L.A. when they play San Francisco. It's all red. When they play San Francisco. Okay. Thank you, Sal. We'll talk again tomorrow.
All right, guys. You got it. Thanks.
That's our Sal Capaccio on the West Hur Hotline. His appearances are brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
Mike Shope and the Bulldog here. We'll be right back.